Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Wednesday, the 5th of January, recording at 6:57 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time. Now, looking at stock markets generally, we had some follow-through selling occurring in Asia, and this has really interrupted that sequence of market action that I described right on up through the end of this year, where the global uptrend was being not only confirmed but being reconfirmed on almost a daily basis. Mind you, it was getting mature and a number of markets were becoming overbought, as inevitably is the case when you get a strong, consistent, persistent run like that. But there were no signs of deterioration other than that short-term overbought condition. Now, bear in mind, I'm talking again, or I'm repeating, not least for all the many new subscribers who come in, that my best case scenario, really, from September onwards, as I was assessing the rally potential, was always that the best case scenario being this rally would carry well into the first quarter of 2005. Now, it may still do that, but we have seen some deterioration in important indices. For instance, we've seen downward dynamics in some majors. This starts with the S&P and with the NASDAQ indices and also the Dow. We saw a number of small key day reversals, for instance, on Monday, and there was even bigger follow-through yesterday. Other quite important indices that saw certainly downward dynamics, although not necessarily keys, were the Hong Kong Hang Seng Index, the Indian Sensex Index, the Brazilian IBOV Index, and the Mexican Ball Index. I may post some of these charts. I'll almost certainly post some of these charts tomorrow. Now, on the positive side, we've had Australia that had a down day here today, but it was not all that significant, and it closed or retraced at least a third of those declines yesterday by that had occurred on an intraday basis by the close. New Zealand, a very important one I keep citing in terms of being a lead indicator for this, or lead index for this cycle, closed with strong gains. In Asia, Philippines pushing to another new high. The Straits Times Index is still strong, and that had been a leader. But you're probably getting the picture. Some of the world's big indices have deteriorated this week, and whereas some of the remaining leaders certainly are quite in form. In my minimum conclusion, on the basis of this evidence, is that we're seeing a pause and consolidation, but it could be a bit worse than that. That's my opening a short position in the NASDAQ index late last night. It's a very small position. I may be tempted to add to it if it gets what looks to me to be a sort of a gradual technical rally. If not, and if other indices start breaking down on a similar fashion, I will add shorts, perhaps, in other indices, if only to hedge remaining long positions that I still have in a number of markets. Am I going to jump out of my big position in India? No, because that's a core position overall. But I'm wondering, today's downward dynamic is at least an indication that I would not want to be chasing this market on the upside. Not that I've done that. In any event, most of my India position has been held really for quite some time, going all the way back to, I started to build that position in late in the first quarter and early in the second quarter of 2003. Okay. What type of additional action are we getting here today? Inevitably, the European markets fell back following that technical action on Wall Street. And the U.S. is a bit steadier in here today. Nothing big, up 32 in the Dow right now, 2.5, and the S&P about unchanged on the NASDAQ. My March NASDAQ futures contract that I shorted at 581 has been moving a few points in the money and a few points out of the money, so it's just sort of hovering, ranging narrowly near current levels. What would cause stock markets to end the rally sooner rather than later? Well, I think that the big fear right now concerns interest rates. But we have an environment where most people were pretty well aware that U.S. interest rates were going to move higher. And recently there's been talk of more aggressive action on the part of the Fed due to their comments on inflation. My hunch is that certainly a portion of this news has already been discounted, but again, I regard Wall Street as the whole rally that we've seen, predictable rally that started back in March 2003, had the long pause during Q2 and Q3 of last year. I regard that as all being part of a good medium-term technical bull within Wall Street's secular bear, say long defined here as a generational long process of P/E ratio contraction. And I don't see anything to change that view. Okay. How to play it? Well, I'll continue to watch other than what I've just outlined for you. Treasury bonds, they're continuing to range in here just when it looks like to me as if they're about to move back down towards the lower side of that range, which would take the March contract down to the 110 level or a bit further. They tend to bounce a bit in here. Probably bonds will get their best downside move when more of the people who were incredibly bearish of bonds at the beginning of last year have joined those who are saying it's either a 50-50 play or that they can even make a case for them moving higher. I maintain that it's liquidity and foreign buying to keep the recycling of dollars to keep currencies such as the Chinese renminbi and the Japanese yen from rallying that's really supporting the U.S. Treasury bond market, and that it remains an accident to happen, and I do expect that accident to occur this year. That's my short position, but I don't want to be too aggressive. I'm treating it on a baby steps basis. In other words, sell lightly on the rallies, cover a bit on the sell-offs. And we'll continue to do so until we get a clearly established trend. I do think that when this breaks down, assuming I'm right and it does break down, that it'll break down pretty dramatically. Now, the dramatic news, though, more recently, has been in currencies and in commodity prices, some commodity prices. And we have, of course, had that sharp rally in the U.S. dollar this week. And that continued this morning before pausing, and we've got the euro unchanged on the day. We've got the Australian dollar unchanged on the day. It's 76.5, having been down to 75.95. But it's a much quieter day here in the currency markets. All I can say at this stage is that I don't think this is any more than a short-term technical rally for the U.S. dollar, but more importantly, to indicate that this rally is over and that the lows are going to be retested, as I suspect is going to happen probably in coming weeks, that we will need to see some sort of downward dynamic by the dollar against various currencies, and that's obviously not happening in here today, nor is that all that surprising, since we've had two vigorous days of rallying off a low and creating a lot of uncertainty in the market. I think this is not speculators pushing in and buying much in the way of dollars, but certainly in covering previous short positions, and inevitably there were plenty of those since the dollar was testing its lows. And you remember, if you look back on those charts that I posted, I think at the late last week of the dollar index that we had gotten down very close to that region of the previous lows at the 80 level on that long-term monthly, can be seen on the long-term monthly chart of the U.S. dollar index. Okay, moving on to the metal markets. Here we have certainly had a fairly significant shakeout, not for the first time. We've had a number of those, we saw a number of those last year and the year before, all within the overall secular bull market environment. Some of these are related to the U.S. dollar's rally, but markets such as gold, for example, has reacted more than the dollar has rallied. And again, I think it's position or a case of a buildup of speculative positions, and not just hedge funds. They usually get the blame or the credit, but anybody who's playing the leveraged futures markets, people will protect those positions with stops. You get a crowding, and then you get the inevitable reactions. Inevitable they are indeed, but that doesn't necessarily mean they're predictable. They can occur very, very quickly, and it's just a cascade effect if you have had a major crowding of shorts. The best strategy in that type of environment, long maintained, is that if you're going to panic, panic early. If you're in a primary trend and you get caught in one of the reactions, provided it's not an over-leveraged position, in other words, provided you're trading well within your capital, you can probably ride it out, provided that primary trend is still intact. I think it is for the supply and elasticity trades. That doesn't mean that they couldn't sit out a number of months in a lengthy consolidation process, or even sit out a year or more, although I doubt that would be the case anytime soon. And I'll cite as evidence that that's unlikely to be the case anytime soon. Have a look at Stephen Roach's comments. Stephen Roach is a bear of most things more often than not, and his own take on this, or he does comment on commodities and on China, saying that China is unlikely to have the hard landing that I know his colleague Andy Z had been calling for, and that a number of other generally bearish people had been calling for. My own feeling is that China is very unlikely to have the hard landing. I mean, it could, and I'm by no means an expert on China, but we know what causes hard landings. It's usually a mismanagement of monetary and fiscal policy. And yes, China had overheated last year, and yes, the government took measures to curb that overheating, but China knows all about hard landings, as Owen Tracy said to me earlier today, having experienced one about 10 years ago. And they will be most anxious not to repeat that, and they are certainly able to use the in what has been a dynamic growth story. There's no reason why they have to have a hard landing, and they've certainly, or they ought to have, the monetary and fiscal know-how to prevent that from happening. And that's what I expect, and I expect that. The U.S. economy, people talk about hedonic reporting and overstating the rate of U.S. growth. I accept those arguments, but nevertheless, the growth is not bad, despite that. And if the U.S. economy and also if China continue to grow at even moderate rates, I think the demand for metals from those two countries and the other major growth stories, such as India, a lot of talk about possibly the European economy showing faster growth rates, well, remains to be seen. I'm not entirely convinced, but overall, we've got a global economic recovery. You'll have the reconstruction in parts of Asia, which have been damaged by the tsunami, and I think this is going to keep demand for metals relatively strong. Gold, certainly as a currency hedge, is going to remain attractive, and I maintain that gold and silver are in a buying range at current levels. Now, one move that I've made that I haven't mentioned in comment of the day because I don't know the prices yet. I got a late call from my spread broker dealer, just saying that the tin position, I needed to either walk away from that, let it expire, or roll that position over, and I have rolled that over. I hope that's not going to be cavalier, but I am banking on what is we've seen for the last 3 years, that we get these bungee jumps in metals, and then they move steadily back up, and often through the or up through the previous highs more often than not. I've been a little cavalier in letting that tin position run. I certainly wouldn't have done that if it had been a large position. Fortunately, it wasn't, although the percentage loss will be embarrassing. Have an excellent evening.